Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryankaravavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so what was the last one?
One should offer a sacred archivo. That was the last one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then we are on 31. One should take all kinds of risks and perform all endeavors for Krishna's benefit. So that's, we should see how we can take up service. Service sometimes means risk. Risk can be personal. Risk can be other, in more subtle way. That ultimately it means that when we want to fully surrender to the Lord, we have to take the risk that we have full faith in the Lord, and then Lord will actually protect us. So, in fact, it's not a risk, but for us, we may take it like that. Because it's our identity which we are putting in, at stake. We may not be sure what's going to happen due to our conditioned nature. So, and we don't have the clear idea of what our relationship with Krishna is. So then we are taking the risk. But by taking the risk, then we can get purified. That's the only way. Yes?
How do we know what risks to take?
Well, we have to, based on Guru Sadhu Shastra, see what is beneficial for us. Also, we mentioned before that sometimes you may know somewhere there is a bomb, right? So then, Krishna will protect me. No, so then I can go anywhere. I can do anything. I can go and rob a bank, and then Krishna will protect me. So, is this actually favorable to Krishna consciousness? In this case, we are asking Krishna to serve us. No, I'm going to do this, but you serve me. So that's not, we cannot call this as a beneficial. So what we have to do is to see, we are serving the Lord, right? Now, we know that, there are some devotees, they are waiting, devotees are in danger or something, and you are going to help them. You are driving the car. Now, knowing that the devotees depend on you, then you may even go faster than the allowed limit. Right? And then even if they catch you, you may just make up some story or say that real stuff, whatever it may be, and depend that you may actually get there on time. So you do your best to get there on time. It's not, you don't take pleasure in that. It does not benefit you personally in any way. The only benefit you get is that you are serving the Vaishnavas or serving the Lord. But if you don't have to, you are not going to speed too much in the city or anywhere. You may go, and then if you are not in a hurry, you look under your feet not to step on the ants. But if you do Harinam, and then you are carrying deities, you cannot look under your feet if you are stepping on ants or not. You have full attention on the deities. So you will be looking at not to tip over. So you are already engaged. So in the sense of you are already doing your duties, so everything else, then Lord will take care. But if you don't have any duties, why would you not to look where you are stepping, what do you do?
It can be a fine line, though, can it? I mean, if there's a bomb and you go down and preach, the Lord takes care of his devotees near the bomb.
Well,
how close to the bomb?
Yeah, but if you want to draw a fine line, then take example, say, Prahlad Maharaj.
Yeah.
Right? He was fully dependent on the Lord. And he didn't really expect him to help, but he was always praying to the Lord, and then nothing could harm him. So the fine line is the depth of the devotion which we develop. So if it's, I did this for Krishna today, so maybe today he should do this for me. So that's not a relationship, it's a business.
Yeah.
So naturally it will be in the mentality of that each and every devotee. You may have two people praying in front of the deities, but what do you know what they are praying for? One may be praying, oh Krishna, you are so beautiful, now is there any way I can serve you? And the other one just may pray for something materialistic. We don't know. But we treat them as the devotees. But naturally, the devotee who has qualities of elevated Vaishnava, we would like to take association of. Yeah? And perform all endeavors for Krishna's benefit. So Krishna is the object. So that's what we have to see.
That was my example with the bomb also, He wants to spread Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
So what better way to do that than to show the people that nothing can harm you? And then in the process he does something stupid.
But you see, if he goes there, he doesn't know, he's in ignorance.
Then
that's
one. He knows and he just trusts Krishna.
Yeah, but you see, he knows and he's supposed to help. He knows that there are some people in danger. So he may take that and try to save them, and help them to become Krishna conscious.
But we're all in danger as material.
Of course. There is a building, and the building is a bomb, and then they are not emptying the building. Okay, so then he takes the courage and he helps helping the building, right?
Mm.
But so that may be not all right, and then he preaches to the people in the meanwhile. That can be considered as a preaching.
Mm.
But if everybody is out and they say, don't go there, there is a bomb. You have nothing to do there. No, nothing can happen to me. No, I can just go wherever I want. That's selfish. That's about me, not about Krishna.
Does it have to be, though? Can it not be, now I can show these people who are lost in darkness and ignorance how Krishna protects his devotees?
But who will show? I will show, not Krishna. Krishna will reveal himself to whoever is qualified or whoever wants to be revealed. But I want to become famous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No. Me, I'm the best. I'm
the best
of all.
Okay.
Okay, 32. In every condition, one should be a surrendered soul. So surrendered soul means we try to do our best to, according to our ability, whatever we can do. Surrendered means we are trying to shelter off. So, not be attached to our anarthas, not be too much concerned about our false ego, just try to surrender. So sometimes we may not be able to do that. Sometimes there will be obstacles. Certain activities we may not be able to do. So at least we will just pray. Okay, Guru, our Guru may ask us to do something. And then we try, we are not successful. So, all right, I could not do it. Try it again. As much as you can, no, do your best. If you cannot, then no, humbly you come. No, I'm sorry, I could not have done it. No, please, maybe you can instruct me, what am I supposed to do? Surrender. There is, I want to do it, I'm unable to. But I'm not giving it up. So that way then, we are not giving up the relationship. We keep trying. And then once we will find the way how to do it, then we will be able to understand how to achieve the goal and surrender. Then one should pour water on the tulsi tree. So we should worship the great devotees, then we should worship Tulsi Devi. Because Tulsi Devi is a, no, is a giver of bhakti. So if we no, please her, then she will be the one who can actually no, speak for us no, in the spiritual world, that we may be taken into the no, into the family of the devotees there. Yes?
Does that mean literally pour the water on the tree? Because I was given the impression that it's to water.
It's watering.
Sometimes you see the devotees are also putting it on the leaves and then...
No, that's not... I mean, it's more like a sentiment that it's the roots. Exactly. It's just watering.
But maybe they're thinking that they're also washing, but because that's also to the...
Maybe. It's just watering the roots. Okay, 34. One should regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam and similar literature, which we already discussed. That was the one of the previous ones. Yes?
About tulsi, is there any special meaning when the devotees touch the leaves?
They are trying to get blessings of her, no, taking mercy, but it's it doesn't, I mean, it's more like a sentiment that way. I don't know exactly how Srila Prabhupada no, showed, but as I know what was just always water through Sri Devi. Yes.
From the very text of white.
As yeah, as a prasad, no, they touch and they put it as a dot. Yeah, well.
That is given in the manual for worshipping Tulasi, that you take the dust of the lotus feet and put it on the other.
Yeah, you can. The same way you also get it that you pay obeisance to Tulasi Devi and the dust comes on your head. So you don't have to. Because you see, sometimes when the Tulsi Devi is, and then many people not put the hands there, the Tulsi Devi is shaking, and it's very inconvenient for her. And the devotees are not careful. Sometimes they break leaves or branches, you know, when putting the hand, because they are trying to be fast or not squeeze through. It's where is the devotion? No, it's many times in well in especially in the West. Now, during winter, it's not good to water her too much because there is because of the cold, and she may get some diseases and like that. So then they generally don't water Tulsi Devi for those reasons. So they have some like Visarjan Patra and then just they pour, but it's more controlled not to. So they may have their own ways how to do it, but the main thing is to water. We water the Tulsi Devi. We pour the water on the roots, and we don't have to touch or do anything. No, around. We just pray for her mercy. That's it. And all the activities, all the mudras and like that, we get by paying obeisance to her. Yeah. Okay, so then Srimad Bhagavatam Simha literature, then we already went through. 23, yeah? Yeah, that was the Lord's pastimes. So literature like Bhagavatam means we are trying to see how other devotees succeeded in their spiritual lives. We are trying to solve our problems, because we do have many problems, and if we don't know how to do it, we have to have faith that the Vedic culture, the Vedic scriptures, the literature has the solution to our problem. And reading literature action of Bhagavatam, it's a great opportunity to find the solutions for our problems. Because there is no problem in the world which is not solved in the scriptures. We may think we are so unique that we have special problem. But that's because we are so uneducated, we don't know that the same problem so many people had before us. And they did successfully solve this problem. So we just have to look up maybe folio, right? And then type our problem and push the button, and then it will come up. Maybe this is the next version of folio, and you can do it like, okay, I have this problem. Then it will come up, where's this? No, this devotee also had the same problem. Maybe that's upcoming. Yeah, I mean, it would be really nice, because then we will not feel so down. And actually, sometimes the devotees, by maintaining that they have a special problem, they actually maintain that the idea they are special. They are something else, somebody else. So if I cannot be the best, then maybe I can be the one who has either unlimited problems or unsolvable problem. So I'm the worst. I'm unique some way. If not the best, then the worst. That's all about selfishness. So we should have trust that our problems were there before and they were already solved. If you look up what the problem, how was it solved in the past, then we can find out the solution is also for us. And you can be assured that the time between the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken and today plays no difference. The instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam, they are eternal. So then we should not say that, that doesn't apply now, we need to find some modern solutions. This is just a detail. Because today is modern, then tomorrow will be past. But the Sanatan Dharma, it's eternal. So it's up to us what actually we want. If we want to take up Krishna consciousness, or we are looking for somehow to enjoy or to maintain our own attachments to the material world through our understanding of our so-called culture. Then yes, in that case we may not be able to find proper solutions to the problem. An example is an official article. Just recently it came out. Then they found a new medicine for treating drug addicts. And they did the clinical tests, and it works well. It cures, actually it not treats and cures people addicted to some sort of drugs, just some kind. And it's successful, but nobody is taking up its manufacturing or distribution. Then there was a guy, high position in the pharmaceutical industry, and he said actually that it's because the medicine it cures, that's why it's not popular. Because when medicine cures, then you don't need it anymore. That means that people don't buy it anymore. So you don't get the profits. Top selling drugs, what they are selling now, there are the first five top selling drugs are those which don't cure anything. Means you have to perpetually keep taking them. They help in something, but they don't cure. Those are the best what the pharmaceutical industry wants. Because that make money. People have to take it every day. So nobody is into looking to solve the problem. It's a business. To solve a problem means you don't need the person anymore. You don't need the thing anymore. Your problem is solved. But if they postponed it and then make it into different problem, then means you have to come back. So we should not take the modern approach very seriously. The people are not into helping others. Those people are only after their money, nothing else. So don't be in illusion. Really, there is nothing much we can take from the modern approach of the science. And in fact, we don't have to, because everything is in the Shastra. We just have to get into to study it and to understand it.
One should live in a sacred place like Mathura, Vrindavan or Dwaraka. So where Krishna's pastimes are happening, then a person should live there. Because naturally, the people will be very devoted to the Lord. Then the atmosphere of the place will be very favorable. It will be very nice ambience. And for our consciousness, it will be favorable because of that. And knowing that the pastimes were happening there. Now, if we actually understand it, and understand means realize, not just understand as a, intellectually, then we will see the place, actually, that this is not different from Vrindavan. When we go to Vrindavan and we realize Vrindavan, we won't see the garbage. We will see Chintamaya dust. We will not see the nasty rickshawalas and people trying to screw us up. We will see very kind bridge buses. I mean, you can even, if you go to Vrindavan, maybe take a little walk and walk a little bit out of the Vrindavan town. And you may get a glimpse of, into the villages, you may get a glimpse of understanding who Brijvasis are. Because many of these rikshavalas, I would say actually all of these rikshavalas are not Brijvasis. They are basically Biharis and Bengalis. So you deal now with them. Well, whatever. But what I'm saying, take a little walk and go into the villages. Maybe just even cross Yamuna, and right across Yamuna, there are a few, just visit those. And go and do Madhukari. And you will see the approach which they will take. The Brijvasis, they are known for, if you don't have anything, that means if you approach them in the humble mood for Madhukari, they are able to give you everything. They give. But if you approach them, that, oh look, I have this, come by car, show, and then look down at them, they take everything from you. So it's the mood, if you come in humble mood, you approach them, they are able to share with you the mood of Krishna consciousness. But if you come in the mood that you are the boss, you know more than them, and they are just some poor villagers, they will distract you. They will destroy you, in fact. The ego will be shattered into pieces. Yes?
So this point is also mentioned in the first and second points, and it is again mentioned as the last point. So why is it repeated?
Well, yes, it's in a Sanskrit, when you have something important, then it's repeated. So over here, the reading Shrimad Bhagavatam, then it was. First, it was about the pastimes of the Lord, and then reading literature like Shrimad Bhagavatam. So there was more general, but more general based on that we should take the instructions from the Bhagavatam. Now, residing in the holy places, then it's repeated here. So just for us to know that we should not underestimate it actually. What was the
first one? Was it residing in a sacred place of pilgrimage?
Mm-hmm.
So, what is the subtle difference from that point to just residing?
Okay, residing
is the seventh point.
Mm-hmm.
Seven.
Yeah. Pilgrimage is you're traveling, so then you may be in various places, so you go and visit the places of pilgrimages. So then means you are doing parikrama. You travel, you see the devotees. So that's very auspicious. But then when you decide that you actually want to render certain service, so then beneficial may be just you fix to one place, to one point, and be the holy dham. We should also understand that the holy dham does not physically mean only the holy dham. A devotee in the West, he may be fixed in the service of the deities in his temple. He is in Vrindavan. So he may be fixed there, and that's where he lives his life, and he goes back to Godhead.
So from this it seems that it's more important to go on pilgrimage to the holy places, because it's mentioned in the first 10 points, than to reside in the holy place.
Srila Prabhupada also wanted us to come to Mayapur for the festival, so to travel to see the devotees, but then afterwards go back to your place and create the same mood at your place. So then rather than just going to places of pilgrimage, you create the places of pilgrimage all over the world. And Srila Prabhupada wanted every town and village. So then when that happens, then the whole world will be basically place of pilgrimage. There will be place everywhere. Yes?
But on the other hand, in the next paragraph it says, of these 64, five are very important. Living in Mathura is mentioned here, it's very important.
Yeah. So that's when you become fixed.
Yeah.
See, you get fixed into your certain duty, and then so you are living the duty. That duty is meaning of your life. That's the meaning of your relationship with the Lord. One should offer service to the Vaishnavas. So then we should find the opportunity to serve. So then the best is Dharati Prati Grihnati. That way then we can always give charity, accept. Guhya Makriti Prichati, Bhungte Bojayate. So that way then we can develop the loving relationship between the Vaishnavas. That's the ideal. One should arrange one's devotional service according to one's means. So somebody who is rich, then he may be giving a lot of charity for the preaching purposes, maybe building temple, maybe this, maybe that. No, giving donation for book distribution, printing books. No, that's according to one's means. Somebody may be very poor, so he may be giving very less charity, or he may not be able to give any. But if you look at the life of Kolarvacha Sridhar, so then he didn't have almost anything, almost no income, but still 50% of his almost no income then would go for charity. He would distribute among the Vaishnavas. So in that way then, even though he was almost like a beggar, then it actually made him very rich, because he still have enough to give away. And then because of that also he was very dear devotee of the Lord. So we should take example of this, that even though we may not have much, but out of that much still something, little bit, we can still give for purposes of the preaching. And it should be based on the real means, not that what we want to present ourselves or no, it should be reality. Before, it was actually, when you have a rich person, then in India, that crorepatis, now those who have like tens of millions of rupees, and at that time it was a huge amount of money. That time rupee was very strong. So those people, among the crowd, you may not even recognize them. How they would walk, they would have just a plain, white, clean dhoti, a kurta, a chadar, and that's it. No, not necessarily Vaishnavas, but this is the dress. So, nothing fancy, no fancy cars, no fancy anything. They just know they are rich, and that's their satisfaction. And they would give charity. Nowadays, when you have that novo rich people, so then they became rich by their own effort, and they must make sure that you know that they are rich. So then you will see gold chains and the latest fashion, whatever the celebrities are wearing. It's these are people who, well, they claim that their social status, they must show it, otherwise nobody will talk to them. So they want to move in certain area, so then they are trying to fit in. So then they have to drive certain car. If they drive not different kind of car, then they will not be accepted in that circle. So therefore, this is not just trying to fit in, so then they can get into the area. That's up to them. But for a Vaishnava, if he comes dressed properly, in dhoti, then he may look like, I don't know this guy, be careful, who is he, we don't know. But if we deal properly, then we can actually give very nice preaching, and we can show the people how important message we have to give. That we take the pride in being associated with the Vaishnavas, and then that we try to spread the message of Srila Prabhupada, that makes us strong. And then people, if we use the, or try to understand Srila Prabhupada's language and use the similar language and the idea how Srila Prabhupada was preaching, then the people will understand that we have something very, very urgent and important to give them. So we should not think that we are the doers. We have just the message to give. And then people will understand. It's how important actually it is, how people see us. Is in South India, before we didn't have any problems coming into the temples, the South Indian temples. Even though some Westerners are not allowed, but devotees would be always allowed. Now some temples are closed for us. And it's because certain devotees created very bad image for our society. And because of that, now they don't take us seriously as sadhus. So among some, even within India, now we are not considered as a bona fide Vaishnav society. But it's our fault. Srila Prabhupada was very clear, and he created a very great image of our society. And we, by our own behavior, we partially did damage to this. So we have to be very careful how we preach. Now, this is that's answering also this question about what does it mean to take risks. Now, if we take a risk, so we have to see how does that risk affect others. Risk means personal risk. Now, because if I go and do something which it's really stupid and it affects the relationships, then it will affect everybody within the ISKCON. There were some devotees in Jaipur distributing books. Now, they were selling the books from a car. Now, the car they parked right in the entrance of the palace, because it was empty, right? And they are there. Okay, nobody said anything. They are sadhus just selling books. All right. Now suddenly a car comes and wants to go in. They don't move. Okay, then somebody comes from the car and tells something to the devotees. And the devotees start to argue, and they, now we are here, we are selling books, and then this, that. It happened actually that in the car was the king of Jaipur. And they just didn't want to move. We are Brahmanas, he is a king, he is too, no, we don't give our way. So, where is the culture? So, of course, so then, I think that time the king walked, and then he was not very pleased. So they drew in the relationship right there. Now, fortunately, there are many devotees also who have good relationship with him, so something got explained. But it made a dent in our reputation. In South India, see, the incident actually what happened is that there were some devotees. You have a temple, right? So in the temple properties, then that's considered as a sacred and it's pure. Now, there were some devotees and they decided, they need to go to, there's a call of nature, so then they need to pass water. So then they started to pass water on the wall of the temple. There was a priest. And he told, don't, not here. I don't understand. And then just did what they need to do, right? Since that time, then they just considered as mlachas and yavanas, and then we are not allowed to enter the temple. One incident. Just one. And ruins the relationships. So this is selfishness. That's how we think about ourselves, how important we are. We don't consider others. In one restaurant, it's a temple, and we were very much welcome in the temple. And they would invite us for feasts and everything. On one of those feasts, then some devotees, they went into the kitchen there and they washed their hands into the pots. When they saw that, they never invited us again. And these are just very simple, basic, some attributes of very basic culture. We don't know this, we ruin reputation of ourselves and the whole society. Because the people, they don't discriminate between that you are devotee of ISKCON from that country, and then you are devotee of ISKCON from this country. They just see a devotee, they see you are from ISKCON, then you are like this. And you cannot blame them. So we have to be very careful how we deal with individuals. Because if you want or you don't, you are representing the whole society. We were traveling in Himalayas. And there are many ashrams which there are a lot of Shankarites, and not many Vaishnavas, but even though there are few, but there are many ashrams, sadhus. And it's tradition that you come as a sadhu, you can just go spend a few nights there and just continue traveling. So we came there, with the boys, and then we would spend a couple of nights in one ashram, and then we went up Yamunotri. And I come back and we were ready to go to Gangotri, just want to spend one night. Then we come to that same ashram, and there was one sannyasi. He was very happy to see us, and he said, yes, yes, you can stay with me. Now, that Mahant, that the person whom the ashram actually belongs, then once we were inside, then he said, no, please, no, go find some other place to stay. And we didn't know why. Then we inquired, and that the thing was that he had very bad experience with his ISKCON devotees. And it was that he was visiting a hospital in Vrindavan because one of their devotees was sick. And so it happened in the same room there was one ISKCON devotee sick. So some ISKCON devotees came visit that devotee, right? And okay, some couple of beds on the side, and the other devotee, you know, the Shankara was, the Swamiji was there, no, with his guests. Now, the devotees, naturally, they always carry prasad, so they were starting giving prasad, and giving prasad to everybody. But when they see the Shankaras, they said, no, you don't get, you rot to hell. And then just give it to everybody else but them. So they told us, you are not no sadhus. And just because, no, just one devotee does something like this. So education is very important. The devotees don't know how to behave. They don't know what to do. They don't know the culture. They are ignorant. Yesterday, I had another, no, actually there was another incident like that. Okay, in Calcutta, I know a few people there, and then I buy stuff for the Gurukul from them, so then they know me very well. But within the community of the businessmen, so then they also have certain people, you know, who on the street they take people and they bring him to the shop, and they get some cut from that. Now, there is a rule among those, because the businessmen, they are really dependent on the brokers who are going to bring the people. So then they always get the cut. Now, if you are brought to the shop by the broker and you don't say that, oh, he didn't come with me. So then the shopkeeper start talking to the broker. That means there is already agreement that he is going to take a cut from whatever he gets. So it happened, one devotee was yesterday going into a shop like that, and but he was not dressed as a devotee, so then he didn't know. Now, so he saw broker, no, brought him, and that, so he was talking to the broker. Now, while the conversation is going on, he figures out there's a Kantimala. So he said, maybe he's a devotee. So he asked, no, are you from ISKCON? He said, yes, I'm from ISKCON. So then he figured out, well, he knows me. So then now he said, I also know a devotee. And then he suggested, well, could I deliver the item which you want to your place, wherever you are in Calcutta? Because if he can do that, if he would agree, then he can give him the real price. But if he would say no, then he has to give him the price including the price for the broker. So he didn't know what's going on. He didn't know what's happening, why two prices. So he called me. So I spoke with the devotee, and I explained to him the same thing which he did. But he, not knowing what's happening, this is some conspiracy. I'm not buying anything. I'm just leaving. So he could have easily just forget about that, just give him the price which he would give to anybody else, get that, pay the broker, and he is satisfied, and that one is satisfied. He is a very nice person, even though he is a cutthroat businessman. But with devotees, he is very nice. So he tried to save the little money, but especially for a relationship, he wasn't appreciated. And he was actually not even accused that he is doing some conspiracy and like that. So he had to do that because he is depending on the broker, so he cannot now take the cash and not to pay that guy, because he's a businessman, he's not going to do anything without profit. So he offered, please don't buy it now, I'll send it to you, and then you just pay me the real price. But the broker cannot see that. No, I don't agree with that. No, I don't want that. No, this is not right. Something is... He was not listening.
You think that after he'd spoken to you?
Yeah. I mean, it was ongoing. I tried to explain, and then after he said, yeah, I don't know what's happening. No, I'm not out buying anything. Then just put the phone down. So even though you may try to explain the culture, to somebody, but just they're not willing to even listen. If he wouldn't say anything, he takes the money, he is already bought it and be happy. But now he knows that this is not the real price, he tried to help him. But he didn't accept the help, and he thought it's a conspiracy. Nowadays, yes, because who is going to help you in this world? Who is going to give you something for cheaper just because maybe they like you or like that? There must be something fishy. That's not normal. Maybe it's some second-class stuff. No, I don't trust that person. But if we cannot, we have no relationship. We don't know what the relationship is. We are not trying to understand his position. He tried to help. But his hands were bound because he already spoke to the broker. If he takes the money and don't pay the broker, then all the brokers will stop bringing customers to his shop. And he's a businessman, so what can he do? He cannot live without customers. But the other devotee wouldn't listen. True, I mean, go to Vrindavan, go to Loi Bazaar, and then they will, again, all the devotees buy from me. Yes. No, just come, I'll give you the best price, and then you get divorced. It's true. But, he really tried his best. Uh-huh. No, I know him, he's an honest man, even though businessman, he's an honest man. And then he tried to he called me just to try help the situation and then to explain. But he still didn't listen. He thought that he's being cheated. But if he would give the price which he sells to everybody else, it was very competitive price anyway. So next time maybe he will just not bother at all. No, he will just take the prices from anybody else. And because for him, he doesn't gain anything from it. So maybe he will do it this way next time. But he tried to be not nice because he is a pious person. But we have to see, even in our being so critical or so suspicious, we still have to leave a little bit the open mind. Because what if? What if this person is for real? There was one king, and he was declared by Lord Vishnu. Yeah, he's great devotee. He's very, very pious. He's great devotee, and that he deserves Amrita. Or it was Brahma. Yeah, that he deserves Amrita. But Indra was saying, no. He is not that great. He doesn't. So I'll go and test him. So Indra comes down as a chandala. And he is very devoted, pious, but he's very much into rules and regulations. So he is somewhere in desert, dying of thirst. And then Indra comes as a chandala, offers him water. Now the king, he was praying, please, send me water. Send me, I'm so thirsty. And so here he comes as a chandala. Oh, I cannot take this. I will lose my caste. No, Lord, why are you doing this to me? No, I cannot accept this. So he was so much into rules and regulations. No, he could not. He did not, and therefore he did not get his Amrita. So sometimes we have to be, understanding of what is the arrangement of the Lord. Because if we are so much into ourselves, then we may completely forget that or not understand that the Lord may be in front of us. And then we completely miss the opportunity to reciprocate with Him. Therefore we have to be very seeing like somebody wants to cheat us, so then we don't want to waste Krishna's money. So we do what we need to do. But if somebody is actually not trying to help, then maybe why don't we try to take it that he's actually trying to help us? There are many cheaters. And we are so scared because it affects us. So we are not abhaya. We are scared that we get cheated and it's about us. But if we can understand that even the person, maybe he is not trying to cheat us. So we should be we can be suspicious. But we should be very expert to figure out what his mentality is, how he acts, and then see how to check. Is he just saying it or is he for real? Now, if he is willing not to explain, and he even calls somebody, a devotee, and just try to explain it through that, and still you see it as a conspiracy, and you may not have the right vision.
Yeah, I just mentioned that because that does grow. You cheat everywhere.
But at the same time, see, the devotees, when they come to festival, so they don't mind paying 100 rupees for riksha.
Yeah.
And then after the festival, we have to deal with it. Okay. Well, I don't take riksha, but the other devotees who take, they have to, 100 rupees. What 100 rupees? What do you mean? It's 15. No, everybody was giving 100. So that's what they ruin. They don't mind it's only $2 and just take it, Just see, I have this, We are from rich country and you are from the poor guys here, So take it and buy something yourself. It's a pride. Every festival, they say, pay the right amount to the rickshaws. Who cares? Not the visiting devotees, not many. Because they are here just for a few weeks, and then they can do whatever they want. No, but that's the root of the problem. So then after that, they get cheated. Yes?
Also, I mean, when I first came here, there were some times when I knew that, I mean, I wasn't paying 100 rupees for a rickshaw, but there were some times when I knew I was probably getting cheated now. But everything is new, and you don't know the right price. So,
yeah.
I mean,
that's why they are announcing in the temple, and they even put like a rate chart.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Now it's for a devotee who is new, it's good to find out the local rules because it's not just for him, but it's also like not to preserve the culture as it is, now the ambience as it is. So, they are trying, and I hear it now. The announcement when they are giving the festival, they say that, and it's even, I think, in the brochure they print it out. Just devotees should be informed. Education.
I agree completely. Many visiting devotees, they don't realize that they're actually destroying the culture by throwing these.
I mean, I remember when I came first, also very bewildered and everything. But it's a game. You can play kind of like the bargain, and it works. When I was buying some stuff, so then. When they, you go, and especially it's like on the street, so then something you want to get. So then, how much it is? 100 rupees. Okay, I'll give you 20. Okay, 25. And that's it. And it's done. If you say 90, I cannot, 95. So then, they still, but if you, and it will take a long time. But if you say the real price, they know so there is no point just to, okay, give it this 5 rupees extra.
Yeah.
Okay, so then take it and it's done. So, but you have to have that little courage, you have to be a little bit bold with those guys because they are, quite tough.
You've done it before.
Yeah, going to Barabajar and all these places in Calcutta, you have to be. But, yes.
Just a question about the essay on Samanya Bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
In place of devotion, it has Samanya Bhakti as introduction in chapter 1.
Sorry?
In place of devotion,
It
has Samanya Bhakti as introduction in chapter 1.
Okay.
Whereas I think the essay says chapter 1 to 5.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like a preparation for the basic principles are written in the first five chapters. That's
the first wave is Samanya Bhakti, and that's introduction to chapter 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, see, this is given. I got it from Maharaj, and then he got it from some other place. We should do it this way: as the first five as the basic definitions, and then from the main principles, then up to the chapter 14. This is Vaidhi, Sarana. Then 15, 16 is Raganuga, Sarana. And then 17, it's Bhava. And 18 is Prema Bhakti.
I think it's at the back of the book. In the appendix.
The appendix, yeah. Yeah. It's actually in the appendix, the first wave, and that's from from page 3 to 53. That's Samanya Bhakti. So that's first five chapters. The first wave is Samanya Bhakti. Second wave is Sarana Bhakti. Starts from page 53, chapter 6. So it's Prabhupada's definition. Okay?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama,